This is MSO News Sports. I'm Bill Newell, and we are joined by Winthrop head football coach John Cadogan. And we are continuing our series with North Shore coaches, hearing their stories about how they got into football, played football, now coaching football, and everything in between. And of course, a peek ahead to the 2023 season, if possible, here. But John, first up, welcome. Thanks so much for taking some time and participating in these grueling interviews with us.
Thanks for having me, Bill. It's always welcome and always good to hear your voice.
Thank you so much.
Right around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. And that is it. It's summertime. You know, as a football coach, I'm sure you kick your feet up once in a while, relax, and but it's not going to last for long, I don't think. So let me begin with the first question. It goes way back here for you. But, John, in your youngest years, what do you remember about football and your first kind of experience with football?
So growing up here in Massachusetts, I was born in 1983, so that'll date me. This is my 40th birthday this summer, so. But the Patriots weren't very good when I was growing up. So one thing, and it was always kind of a Saturday thing, is my father and myself, we would sit down and watch Notre Dame. So Notre Dame was always the team. I'm sure it's been that way for a lot of, young guys my age and so on and so forth. But that was really the first team that I kind of got behind, was Notre Dame on Saturdays. And it was early enough in the day that they would play that then you would go out in the backyard and you would be, whoever it was, Jerome Bettis, Rick Meyer, the Rocket was always, one of my favorites. So, I would say my really earliest recollection of watching football was Notre Dame on Saturday.
And it's funny you mentioned that, John, because I'm wondering if that is the case today. Do you think there are people that were your age then, now they're that age, are following Notre Dame like that? I'm probably wrong, but I'm just wondering about that.
I think it's different now, I've always been a Notre Dame fan and I always have felt that they've done the right thing, but they were ahead of their time in a sense of like they had their own channel, NBC, and they still do for that matter, so you knew that every Saturday, you didn't have to worry about, whether the game was going to be on, it was going to be on. Whereas if you were, let's say an Alabama fan, it was more difficult to watch those games. Because Notre Dame just, they had their exclusive rights with NBC. And I think nowadays it's different because there's almost an oversaturation of games that are on TV. Like there's games on from Thursday to Sunday night. There's football on all the time. And for football coach it's great, but I can see it being like maybe too much for, somebody that's not really into it,
Yeah, and it's interesting you do bring back the Notre Dame point because Notre Dame, although based in Indiana, if you will, in South Bend, did not really necessarily, you wouldn't consider it an Indiana team as such. It was Notre Dame. It wasn't Miami. It wasn't Florida. It wasn't USC or any of the other powerhouse teams, Purdue in Indiana. So it had draw and it didn't. People weren't turned off by it by borders or anything like that. You were connected to by Notre Dame for other reasons. So, yeah, that's a good point. And, a lot of us grew up watching a lot of Notre Dame football. That's for sure. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it was the first national brand in college, because like I said, TV really rules everything. And it did at that time. And if they're the only game on, then, that's the team you're going to watch, And like you said, it was a national thing, it wasn't just the Northeast or, the Midwest or it was, I always say that's why they make movies about Notre Dame, and they don't necessarily make them about other colleges because it's kind of always been a natural brand. National brand.
Yeah. Well, I used to interview the Gipper. I go way back. Kidding. All right. John, so you're watching Notre Dame football. So what about as far as playing and, joining, organized football? Where did that begin?
We started youth football in Winthrop when I was in eighth grade. So before that, you know, you had a couple of options. You know, you were going to play with your buddies in the backyard and or you would go to East Boston, because East Boston was the closest city, really, that had Pop Warner. And I find that this is one of the major differences now, you know, with our younger guys is, you know, we just went out and played. We played in the backyard. We played down, you know, River Road in Winthrop, where it's a, you know, a big, long stretch of grass, and that's where we played, you know, and that's where we figured out how to play. That's where we figured out how to tackle and how to fall and how to not get hurt and, you know, all those things. And, you know, it's just the love of the game at that point, because you were just trying to get, you know, 10 of your buddies to meet up down there and you play, you know. And then I think I it was always kind of surprising when I first started playing in seventh grade over in East Boston. And, you know, the first thing they did was they put you at defensive tackle. And I'm like, well, I'm not a defensive tackle. I've been carrying the ball my whole life in the backyard, you know. So it was different, but I think it made you appreciate the game more, that there was different positions and everybody had a responsibility. And it wasn't just about scoring touchdowns or this or that. You know, you were going to play a little bit of a lesser role. In your eyes, maybe it was a lesser role, but, you know, it still helped the team.
Do you, I remember talking, one of the coaches I talked to in the past week was talking about, you know, going to, bringing a football with his friends and going to the local high school games as a kid. Is that something you guys would have done? It would have been on a Saturday afternoon in Winthrop. But I'm thinking Winthrop, even before Friday Night Football, it was always big in Winthrop, you know, the football.
Well, yeah, and I think that's another thing. You know, it was Notre Dame games, but it was also, it was Winthrop, you know, because at the time, you know, 92-93, when they went to back-to-back Super Bowls, you know, and Anthony Palmer was the guy, and Mike Mason, and, you know, all those guys, it's like, those were your heroes growing up, you know, and I can remember going to, you know, both of the Super Bowls, because they ended up being at Winthrop, and just the atmosphere of it all was obviously exciting, you know, and wanting to be a part of that. And that was another thing, like, you know, when we would go to those games, we would watch a little bit, but, you know, we would end up being behind the field across the street, and we'd be playing as they were playing, you know. So, but that was huge, you know, that was huge. And, I mean, and you grow up in a time, and I was certainly lucky to grow up in that time when Winthrop football was, you know, right at the top of the heap, and it kind of made it easy for, hey, that's what you want to do, you know, and that's how you want to carry yourself.
Yeah, there were so many years. Winthrop football was such a rich tradition, not a large school, but incredibly competitive and successful against the bigger schools in that Northeastern Conference. You're right. So, John, tell me now about you going to Winthrop High School, the old high school, obviously, at that point, and getting, you know, playing, you know, whether it be freshman year, sophomore, you know, take me through that and where you played and a note or two from those games.
I think the first thing is when you sign up and you you come out there freshman year. I know for me, the first thing that I heard about was Thanksgiving Day, you know, and that's all you would hear from, like, the older guys, you wait until you see the pep rally, wait until you're around Thanksgiving and that time, and it's exciting, you know. And so I think when you first sign up, like, that was like the number one thing right off the bat, you know, and obviously it's at the end of the season, so you get a whole season to go through, but I think that part of the culture was instilled upon us early on is Thanksgiving Day and, you know, that whole sort of week. But, you know, I think I started out much like probably every other kid, you know, freshman year. You know, you're lucky if you're playing JV, and at the time we had a freshman team. We weren't very good, but, you know, you learn lessons, you know. You learn how to get better even though things aren't good. And most importantly, I think you learn how to show up when things aren't good, you know. So even though we were struggling record-wise, you're still expected to show up and be there. I think sophomore year, I started to play a little bit of special teams during, you know, my sophomore year. We weren't very good again, but, you know, we're trying to turn the corner. And I think one thing that I remember sophomore year is, you know, we only won two games that year. But the two teams we beat Swampscott and we beat Revere. You know, and if you're from Winthrop, those are two pretty big games to win, you know. And so we went 2-8, but, you know, you kind of won the right two games, I guess. junior year, that's when, you know, you start coming into your own, I think, physically. I was more or less a starting tight end, and I rotated in playing linebacker. You know, we were starting to turn the corner as a program. The year before, we were 2-8. We finished 4-7 my junior year, but you could tell that we were, you know, really on the right track. And then my senior year, you know, being a starter both ways at tight end and linebacker, you know, we went 7-4, and really kind of, I think, got the program back to where it was, you know, in terms of, you know, the next couple of years after that. But, you know, I look back and I think, you know, what was the most important part, you know, I think playing 4 years is important because, you know, I see it now, especially as a coach where, you know, you have kids that they want to focus on this one sport or they want to take off, you know, their sophomore year and then come back out their junior year, you know, you know, I obviously don't agree with that because I think you got to kind of push through things, you know, when things aren't going your way. You know, but the other thing that I was most proud of is, you know, we were 4-0 on Thanksgiving, you know, all four of my years. So, and that was, like I said, when you were coming in as a freshman, that was one of the big deals. And being able to say, you know, you played all 4 years against Revere and you didn't lose, that was obviously a big deal for us.
I want to follow up with you because you're in a generation here that, you know, knew what the meaning of big Thanksgiving football games was all about. And yet now you're coaching at a time where, I mean, I think I can honestly say the value or the meaning of the Thanksgiving football game has been diminished, at least as far as standings are concerned. What it means for postseason doesn't count and so on. So I guess, what is your take on all that? How do you reconcile that? I mean, looking at today's playoff system, and I'm not knocking it, by the way. I'm just sharing that there you can't seem to have both, you know, apparently now with in Massachusetts, you know, an important Thanksgiving game and then a legit playoff system. So, you know, give me your take on that. You know, again, as a former player who grew up with Thanksgiving football being very important, but now, of course, where you're at right now.
You know, I don't ever want to get rid of Thanksgiving, you know, because I think it's important. And obviously the way the playoffs are, you know, it's a little weird at times, you know, you're playing in and sometimes it has. But for us in the town of Winthrop, Thanksgiving is always important, you know, whether we're 1-10 or we're 10-0 and we're going to the Super Bowl or whatever it is, you know, we're trying to win that game, you know, and I couldn't, and I understand why people do it, and I understand why coaches do it, and they, you know, they sit guys and they rest them up on Thanksgiving. We will never, ever, ever do that as long as I'm here, you know, and it's just that, because that's how important it is. I also think that Thanksgiving can make your season, you know, and like I said, my sophomore year, we were 1-9 going into that game, and I don't think anybody gave us a shot to win that game. And, you know, we scored on a last second touchdown, and winning that game was like winning the Super Bowl, you know. So as long as Thanksgiving football is in Massachusetts, it'll always be, you know, the playoff, that albatross will always kind of be there. But again, I don't ever want to get rid of Thanksgiving because, you know, it's a real special deal in this town.
Yeah. No, I think I totally agree with what you're saying. That all makes sense to me, and that's the way to approach it for sure. Who was your coach then at that time at Winthrop?
So I was lucky. You know, I had a Hall of Fame coach, Coach Russillo. You know, he's you know, one of the best coaches I feel on the North Shore that there's ever been, you know, certainly one of the best coaches in Winthrop High School history. And I actually, when you think about this, Sean Driscoll, who is the head coach at St. Mary's, was the defensive coordinator when I was in high school, you know. So, you know, I don't know if you realized it at the time of how well, you know, coached you are and, you know, why you do certain things or so on and so forth. But I feel like my coaching style, and I could never be Coach Fusillo and I could obviously never be Coach Driscoll, but I think if you're, you know, you want to be successful, you take the successful parts from those guys and you apply it, you know, in your own different way, you know. And, you know, like I said, I was very lucky. I was very lucky to be coached by those two guys. You know, and you don't realize it at the time, like I said, but then you start, when your coaching career begins, and you start doing things the same way that they did it, and you're like, okay, well, you know, this makes sense now. And you know, but I was very lucky in my high school career, and I certainly wouldn't be where I am now without Coach Fusillo. And really without Coach Driscoll.
Yeah, obviously two fantastic coaches. Are there other coaches that influenced you? That could have been other sports or you know, influence what you do today, so to speak?
Yeah, you know, when I was in middle school, I had a phys ed teacher by the name of Angelo Fantasia. And he was the head basketball coach at Savio at the time. And, you know, we didn't realize it because we saw him from the PE setting. And just the way he would, you know, go about teaching class and really made a connection with all of us and really made it fun. And, you know, being a PE teacher now, you know, there's always parts that kind of rub off on, you know, what he did. Even when I was in middle school, and I remember it, and I think the connection part was important, and that's really what I kind of took away from that, you know. So he was definitely, from a teaching aspect, it was definitely Angelo Fantasia.
Yeah, well, that's a great story. How did you get into coaching then? Tell us how that all happened and how you kind of entered, got your first foray into coaching. Where was that?
So, you know, when senior year rolls around and I got a pretty good idea that, you know, I'm done football wise, you know, not necessarily wanting to play. And I ended up going to Salem State, which didn't have football. So, you know, that was an easy decision, I suppose. But, you know, it's the allure of Friday night, you know, that you just never want to give up. And I've been extremely lucky that, with the exception of my freshman year in college, I've been involved in Friday nights now for the last, you know, 25 consecutive years or whatever it is, you know. And I don't think you can really beat that rush of, you know, Friday night football and going through the whole week and preparing. Yeah, I started coaching when I was 19 years old. You know, Coach Fusillo, I went back to and just asked him, you know, if I could help out. And I started out the first year as a wide receiver coach. And to be honest with you, Bill, the first practice was at Miller Field. It was in T-shirt and shorts. And he essentially gave me the playbook and said, here you go, you know, kind of figure it out on your own. And it was, you know, I out on the practice field and I said to myself, I've made the biggest mistake of my life. It was just awful, you know, but it just goes back to what I kind of said earlier. I showed up the next day and it got easier and you showed up the next day and it got easier and you just keep showing up and things just keep getting easier and easier and easier. And then, you know, I think the passion takes over and as to why you're doing it, you know?
So what you were afraid of the very first day when you got that playbook is all the different plays and teaching all these kids what to do in all of those things. I mean, it was a little overwhelming.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, here's the thing. I'm 19 years old. And I'm coaching some of these kids that are 18 years old, and I just shared a huddle with them 2 years ago. you know? So the other thing, and I laugh about it now, is, and it wasn't because I was the best player or this or that, but I felt like coach never yelled at me when I was playing. Like, I was smart, you know? So I figured things out, and I feel like I didn't get yelled at as much. I got yelled at more coaching than I ever did playing, you know? And I would always say to myself when I remember it to this day, when I was 19 years old, saying, I just want to fast forward 10 years. Because when I fast forward 10 years, I'll have that much more knowledge. I'll be that much more separated from the kids age-wise. And, you know, it'll be different, you know, because you're 19 years old and everybody on the team just had the huddle with you 2 years ago and we're still like buddy-buddy. But there needs to be that separation, you know, and that's the hardest thing for a young coach, I think, sometimes.
Well, now I would like to fast forward the other way for 10 years. I would work good for it. Yeah. So, but those things happen. John, what about how have you then evolved as a coach? How you know, following up to what you just talked about, how do you think you personally have evolved? You know, obviously, an assistant job is different than a head coaching job. So how do you think you've evolved?
I think when I first started out coaching, you know, like I said, being 19, it was all about winning. You know, it was all about winning because that's what, you know, when you're younger like that, it matters, you know, and you win and you know, you kind of live off every win and every loss, you know. As I've gotten older, you know, it's more about the connections with the kids, you know, and I can still remember grabbing, and one of the most important moments of my coaching life was sitting down with a kid named Reuben Powell, who was a running back for us. And he had a tough upbringing, and you know, I had not a similar upbringing, but my upbringing wasn't the greatest either, you know. And I just remember sitting down after practice and just laying it out all in line for him, saying, you know, this is how I grew up, and this is, you know, all these different things. And it was somewhat like a therapy session. And that moment, I it just kind of clicked for me. And I realized that that's what this is all about. You know, it's making connections and helping kids. You know, the wins and losses are going to happen. You know, you're never going to go 13-0 every single year. So, you know, there's got to be another reason why you do it as opposed to just winning. And I would say that's really been the number one thing from a young coach to where I am now about, you know, just the connections you have with kids. Don't get me wrong, winning and losing is still important, and we still want to win more than anything, but, you know, it's really been, it's the greatest profession in the world, you know, so...
Well, you know, I talk to coaches, and let's say the coach is on, his team is on a winning streak, but sometimes they lose, and the coach will then have a chance to take a deep breath and think, well, maybe that's really not the worst thing in the world for us because we need to learn about this and that, 1, 2, 3, and we got to put that into our game plan and get the kids to move forward on what they really can do out on the field. But let me ask you this about winning and losing. Is it easier to lose now that you realize that you are going to have losses during the year, or, you know, as an assistant coach or a head coach losing? I don't know which is easier to lose as an assistant coach or a head coach, but I know it's not easy, but how do you handle that?
It's different. You know, it's definitely different when you're an assistant coach. I mean, as an assistant coach, I think you really feel like you care, and you know, you're 100% invested. And I think there are assistant coaches that are that way. But when you are the head coach and everything falls on you, good or bad, it is definitely different with the wins and losses, especially the losses, you know. I think especially nowadays with technology in terms of, like, film study and so on and so forth, like, I can't tell you how many times I've watched, you know, the Stoneham game from last year and the St. Mary's game from last year, you know, from two different camera angles, which, you know, 20 years ago I wouldn't have been able to do, you know. So I think technology plays a big part in it too now, in the sense that you can get, you can watch film on your phone, you can watch film on your iPad, you can watch film wherever you are, you know. So in that sense, it can kind of make you go a little crazy sometimes. But I also think it gives you the opportunity to get better, you know. And I think that's the biggest thing, being a head coach and being a coach in general, is just getting better. Like, I know I'm not the same coach I was even last year, and I feel like I've gotten better. And I feel like every year that's my goal, is to get better, to give our kids the best opportunity to be successful, you know. But I would say, like, in once you put that head coaching hat on, you realize that, you know, it's a whole different ball game from being, you know, a defensive coordinator and just calling, you know, some defensive plays here or there. It's definitely more responsibility, obviously.
No, and I guess, again, well said, I think, too, John. Let me ask you this question here. We've been asking the coaches this question about a big game or an influential game, a game that kind of sticks with you, or a couple of games. It could be 2-3 games, whether it be something you watched, a pro game, a college game, a high school game, a game you played in. A couple of games that just kind of stand out, and as a coach, you keep going back to those games for some reason, something that happened, something you observed, or something? If you were to tell me a game or two, what would you tell me, share with me?
I think right off the bat, when playing-wise, I would have to say it would have been my senior year playing Salem at home, and we played them on a Thursday night. And Salem the year before came off their Super Bowl. They had Matt Horgan, who was, you know, unbelievable running back. At that time we were, I would say, almost at a crossroads in our season. You know, we were about 2-2, so a win would be obviously good. A loss could be, you know, difficult. And there was a legit opponent that, like I said, the year before came off a Super Bowl. But the thing that I remember was the week practicing, you know, and you could tell it was a big week of practice because we were, and I remember it was Coach Driscoll, he handed us a packet, and a packet was all of, you know, Salem's formations and so on and so forth, and we had never really gotten a packet to that point. I mean, we've obviously went over formations and so on and so forth, but I remember thinking, wow, this is like the coolest thing, because for me, that's what I wanted to, you know, do. I'd rather study that stuff than study math or anything like that. And I remember that game because we won, and we won convincingly, and we played very well defensively. And it just kind of always stuck with me of, like, that's the level of preparation you need to win those quote-unquote big games, you know?
John, I'm thinking the year before that, though. Help me out if I'm wrong here, but I thought their Super Bowl year, I thought they went down to Winthrop very late in the year and won a game. So this would have been the year before, obviously, the one you're talking about, and they won at Winthrop. But I may have that all wrong. Does that ring a bell to you or not?
So their first, I shouldn't say their first Super Bowl year, but in '94. So after Winthrop went to back-to-back Super Bowls. 94, and that was the whole strike,
yeah,
and the teacher strike at Salem. Salem actually came down to Winthrop in 94, and they won on a Hail Mary at the end. And Winthrop wasn't great at the time, and I think it kind of propelled Salem, you know, into the Super Bowl.
Okay, so that was much earlier than the game you're talking about. I'm sorry. Yeah. No, but you got that game right. That's right. Yeah, that was the year. You're right. Yeah.
I think that's another thing too, and I think this is kind of where, you know, my passion for football has started. And it's like I said, you know, I feel like I've always been lucky in a sense of, you know, the most storied college football program has always been Notre Dame, you know, and obviously Alabama is doing what they're doing now, but I've always been enamored with, you know, the history of the game and, you know, what made them so good, Notre Dame so good in the 20s and the 30s and the 40s and all that. And I think if you're going to take over a program or be the head coach of a program, then you have to understand the history of the program, you know. And for me, you know, I think, and then I, I miss the old Northeast Conference. You know, I miss playing classical and English every year because that was always, you know, a real gauge for us, you know, being a small school going up against those two giant schools, you know. So I've always been kind of a history buff when it comes to, you know, football in that sense.
Now, again, John, I agree with you totally on that. I wish those two teams were still in the conference or others. I didn't even mind the GBL team. I thought that was not a bad mix either in some ways. I know it was difficult and so on, but the more the merrier as far as I was concerned, I guess, on that front. But, John, let me wrap it up with one last question, I guess it is. You're a coach, football coach, a head coach, as we're talking about here. You're probably thinking Winthrop football 365 days a year, unless maybe there's 2 feet of snow outside on that given day. But even then, probably you're saying, let's get in the weight room. But John, what's top of mind right now for you for the Winthrop program? Here we are just days away from the first practice for the 2023 season. Just tell our listeners what is on your mind right now regarding Winthrop football? Something to do, some concern? What are you thinking?
I think right now, and I think it's probably, you know, similar for a lot of coaches, is just health and consistency. You know, you've now made it through hopefully the whole off season, all the 7-on-7s, and you should be, you know, relatively healthy. And I think, you know, being healthy is one of the major factors in determining, you know, how successful you're going to be. I think the other factor, like I said, is consistency. You know, what team is going to show up on any given day? What team is going to show up on Friday night? What team is going to show up Monday after practice after a big win, you know, or after a big loss? You know, I think just finding that consistency day to day, and really, you know, I kind of say it, you know, to my coaches is just be boring. You know, it's not going to be the greatest thing all the time to, you know, show up to a Monday practice and, you know, Tuesday and so on and so forth. But, you know, being boring and just keep showing up and doing what you're supposed to do day in and day out, and I think you'll get the results that you want, you know, and you'll be playing into December, you know.
Terrific. Well, John, I really appreciate your time. Really enjoyed this, and hearing more about your background as a player, certainly as a coach, and your influences and philosophies and thoughts, and some great stuff. So, John, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate you participating in one of these interviews with us, and we'll be checking back soon to talk with you about the 23 team, and the X's and O's and all the matchups and all that in the not too distant future for sure.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. You know, any chance we get to talk football, I will take it. So I appreciate everything you guys do. Like I said, it's great to hear your voice again.
John, hang on the line. That's John Cadigan, Winthrop High football coach. I'm Bill Newell here on MSONewsSports.com.